A very good morning on behalf of Teach 613. We welcome you to Take 10 for Talmud. Yevamos Kuf Aleph, Yevamos 101, pagination is 201. Midway on the page, we start the new perek, which is finally devoted to mitzvahs chalitza, to the mitzvah of chalitza. In other words, until now in the Masechta, our primary focus was that you have a choice of Yibam or Chalitza. When does Yibam apply? When is Yibam not appropriate? And you would end up doing Chalitza. And when, as we began the Masechta, do you have to do nothing because there's a close relationship between them of a different type besides being the sister-in-law? And you might not have to do anything at all. Finally, now we focus on the mitzvah of chalitza, which is really the focus in our generation of the way this mitzvah would be performed, because nowadays we do not do yibum, and therefore when such a case occurs, we would be doing chalitza, and the procedure is outlined in this perek. Let's recall, we're dealing with brothers of the same father, and one of those brothers was married and died without children. The wife, who is the widow, has a mitzvah of some sort to deal with the yavam, the living brother, and to proceed either with yibum, where this brother-in-law marries her and tries to produce a child to create a legacy for the deceased brother, or if he chooses not to lahakim shem, to create that legacy, he would do chalitza to release her, a process by which he declares that he doesn't want to, and in very simplistic terms, we might say that the woman does an act disgracing him, so to speak, declaring that he's done improperly, at least in a case where Yibum was available to him, and that procedure releases her from the remaining bond that she has with her deceased husband's family. So the Mishnah states, Mitzvah chalitza b'shlosha dayonim. The mitzvah of chalitza requires three judges, afilu shloshtan hedyotos, even if all three are ordinary type judges. They don't have the great smicha that was handed down from Moshe. They could still serve as dayonim, and the fact is, even if they're not excessively scholarly, it is still possible for them to perform or preside over this mitzvah. If you'll drop down to the Gemara says, it's about 10 lines later than where we started, Omeachad afilu shlosha hedyotos dayonim lamali. If you're going to allow three ordinaries, so then why are we calling them dayonim? What exactly is the requirement? And the Gemara answers, Hakamash Malon, this is what we're being taught. Deboidon bishlosha sheyodim lahakros ke'en dayonim. We need three that are able to guide the yavam and the yavama in the statements that they're going to have to make in Lashon HaKodesh, in the wording of the Pasuk, and they have to be knowledgeable enough to be able to do that for these two people, for the Yavam and the Yavama, the woman and the brother-in-law, because otherwise they're simply not qualified enough to preside on the Chalitza. Taisvis over here makes a phenomenal observation. He quantifies what the requirement exactly is regarding these three that are going to serve as the judges. Taisvis is midway, outer commentary, just a few lines higher than where we started in the new Mishnah. Tosfos says, Mitzvas chalitza hakamash malon. This is what we're being taught. Diboinan shlosha sheyodim lahakros ke'en dayonim. We have to have three people that know how to guide them in the statements that they need to say in Lashon HaKodesh as part of the chalitza, like dayonim. They have to be able to conduct themselves. We don't do an x-ray and check in their brains how much they know and how scholarly they are, but they have to be able to conduct themselves to preside over the chalitza. Avo b'sha'ar dvarim, Tosfos says, but by other topics, ein tzarech shiyu b'kiyam bohem, they don't have to know all the halachas. V'chilo asu b'tov, because if they don't do it properly, yuchlu lishol, they can always ask la b'kiyam to the experts. Avo kriya, but reciting those texts that have to be said, im lo yadu lahakros, if they wouldn't know how to say it, lo yuchlu lishol la b'kiyam, they wouldn't know how to ask. Im hikru yafe, if we said it properly, it's not like they're recording it onto their MP3 and then having it reviewed by the b'kiyam, by the experts, they're there. And we have to make sure it gets done correctly. Now, Tosfos, if you just read this Tosfos, you get the impression, like, big deal. So if they did it wrong, they'll ask, and maybe they'll, I don't know, do it again, correctly. And when you learn the Shulchan Aruch, you realize it's not quite that simple. And in a number of places, the Shulchan Aruch records very specifically, you need to make sure that you do the chalitza correctly the first time, because if you don't, it gets very complicated. In certain cases, we're going to need to ask any other brothers to also do chalitza for her if we end up in some quandary and unclear situation and various gezeiros derabanan on such things. So we make sure to get it done correctly the first time. Nevertheless, this Tosfos is a fascinating concept. There's certain things that a dayan, a person of authority, has to get right on his own. He needs to know these things. You can't rely that you're going to ask the experts. But on other things, it's okay as long as you recognize the shaila and you'll be able to ask the experts. I'm reminded of many smichas that are given, and they say that Reb Moshe Feinstein would sometimes give smicha to a person who he felt was talented and appropriate and a bar seichel, a sensible person who had basic knowledge, and he would write his phone number together with the smicha, and he would say, here's your ordination. When a question comes in, please call me if you're not proficient in that topic. And the quip on such judgment calls is, the smicha is only as good as the phone number that's given with it. But that's the idea over here, that somehow there's a division of some things the dayanim have to be experts in, and other things it's okay if they would have to ask or be guided. As far as the Gemara, the Mishnah is concerned, it would be a valid chalitza. We, of course, after Shulchan Aruch is done with all the considerations, require that the dayanim know and are proficient, because we can't afford to have the first chalitza been done wrong, because then it gets extremely complicated. The Mishnah further states a number of items to be aware of. I just want to do a basic overview of the chalitza process. We're using a shoe that doesn't just cover the ankle part the way our shoes do. It actually goes up partway towards the knee. There's a specific section which is recited by the man and the woman before the chalitza. The man is wearing this shoe on his foot. The woman releases, undoes, and takes off the shoe from his foot. She spits in his direction in a way that the dayanim, the judges, are able to see the spit, presumably in Tamei HaMitzvahs, an act of disrespect towards him, that he wasn't willing to create a legacy for his deceased brother. And then there's a statement afterwards which they recite, Kocha Ye'ase, this is what's done to the person who was not willing to uphold the legacy of the brother, and they declare the location, Chalutz Hanal, the place of the Chalitza. One final thought in the concept of Tamei HaMitzvahs, insight into this mitzvah, that it's so critical that she takes off a shoe. That's the ceremony, taking off the shoe from the foot of the living brother. So we have a concept by the bracha of Sha'asa li kol tzarki, that Hashem provided for me in Berchas HaShachar, that it's referring to shoes, because shoes are an amazing thing. Because of them, you're able to travel to different locations, you have mobility, and you're able to be provided for, because even if everything that you need is not right here within arm's reach, you can go, and you're able to travel and accomplish, achieve, and locate the needs that you have. Shoes represent mobility in a very dramatic way. Parenthetically, when Moshe in Parsha Shemos is at the place of Har Sinai and Hashem says, the place is holy, take off your shoes. Taking off your shoes represents, I don't have to go anywhere. I am here. I have arrived. I am in a place that does not require me to travel further. Everything I need to accomplish right here. And that's without shoes. But the average person, typically speaking, needs shoes to have mobility. The deceased brother, now that he's dead, has lost his shoes, if you will. He's lost his mobility in this world. His neshama can't travel, can't continue to accomplish in this world. And the body is like the shoes for the soul. And the shoes likewise represent mobility for a person. The deceased brother does not have that. The living brother is refusing to give him that mobility by creating a legacy for him, and therefore his shoe is removed. The widow spits in his direction and declares, Kocha Ye'asa La'ish, such is done to the man. It's a mida k'neged mida. It's a representation of what he is doing by refusing to create the legacy for his brother. Yashar Koach, thank you for joining.